In my experience, when you have questions or you're curious about something, it's best to have conversations with many people from various backgrounds and help form an opinion or gather more information and details about this subject to help us form our opinions. One of the questions that I've been asked over and over and have been so curious about myself is this movement called the Great Resignation that's going on. It's been going on now for about 2 years. And I'm curious to know what the intention, the process behind it is. Is it really just a bunch of humans that woke up in the last couple of years and were like, yeah, you know what, we don't really want to work these jobs anymore? Or is it this mass consciousness and awakening that's happening that has created this stir within people of wanting to seek more alignment and purpose and fulfillment in their lives? I'm not sure what the answers are, but I definitely do know that the amount of people selling their houses, quitting their jobs, becoming digital nomads, moving into vans, and traveling has increased by a lot. Slightly jealous of those guys too. And it would be wrong for me to say that my life, the landscape of my life, is completely different now than it was 2 years ago. And I don't know if that's thanks to the pandemic or it was forced because of it, a combination of both. But what I do know is I'm really interested in having this conversation. And lucky for me, Isalda Trachtenberg is also really interested on this topic. She's a podcast host and she is just a wonderful human being. And I'm really excited to get her point of view because between you and I, she has traveled the world as a NASA master trainer, helping transform people's perspectives on planet Earth. So who better to share her point of view on the Great Resignation? Thanks for being here. Welcome everyone to this sensational, curious bonus episode of Coffee with Source, where we debunk trendy topics, you know, in spirituality, like Dark Night of the Soul and all of that jazz. But today I'm going to have a chat with my new friend, Isalda Trachtenberg, who is a speaker of ethical innovation. That's a mouthful when there's not enough coffee. She's also a musician, an author, and a podcast hostess. I'm so excited to be having conversations today on a variety of subjects, including the pandemic. What else are we talking about? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That's right. Woohoo. I'm very glad I'm here. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I love that long dark night of the soul, the spirituality aspect. Mm. And it's so interesting how many of us are doing that assessment right now. You know, we're trying to figure out, who am I? Who do I want to be? And it is that moment where we've had so much time, concentrated time to be with our thoughts, that people are making all sorts of decisions about their lives and they're looking to spirituality. There have been so many people who've been doing, they did a study recently where Google released how many people have been searching for specific keywords, and spirituality and depression and planning and things, words like that, keywords like that have been the big words people are searching for, because now we're going, okay, life might be fleeting. Let's figure out exactly the life I want to lead with the time I have. And that's
And also, why am I here? I love that. That was a great intro. You're just like, you and I can work together forever. You just know, you know. But also, why are we here? Now, one of my first thoughts was, I had my existential crisis, dark night of the soul, as the pandemic began. So it was an insane time, the level of stress of what the hell is going on. And within the first few months, I lost both my grandfathers. It was a dark time.
Wow.
The question that kept coming up for me as the pandemic progressed was, why am I here on Earth? What is the purpose? It cannot be just to go to school, to learn a bunch of stuff, to get in a crazy amount of debt, to get a job, to pay off this debt, meet someone, have kids, do the little house on the prairie. And then my biggest goal and desire is to retire healthy so I can travel for a few years before I kick the bucket. And these looping thoughts kept going in my mind, like, this, there's something wrong with this system. This is flawed. This is if there is a God, my school of thought is that there's a greater power. I call it the universe, source, but whatever you believe in, if this person's intention is for us to come to Earth and learn and work and get in debt and get in more debt and buy a lot of things and live in this little square of land and, you know, be really ambitious about external things. And what is the point of that? But those are the questions I had.
And they're great questions. You know, it's
listening
to you.
I don't have all the answers.
No, but you know what? I don't know that you need to have all the answers. I think part of this whole thing, as far as the lessons I've learned, is to be in the process, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get focused on getting the answers instead of looking at the process of finding the answers. That's a big deal.
Getting curious.
Yeah. I curiosity is one of my favorite words in the English language, because it means that you're in a state of mind where you want to know more. And so you've gone through this incredible process of transformation by getting more into the process, asking right. those questions.
And I mean, I dove right into the dark night of the soul.
Yeah. Well, but aren't you?
Curiosity led me to watching little videos online about this person who's having like the same moment, or talking about sage, or talking about, you know, whatever it was, this great book that she'd read by this author. And then I got curious and read it and attracted more like-minded individuals who were sharing their points of views. And that was really comforting, and saying, okay, I'm not going bananas. Because what I was thinking, I didn't want to share. Mm-hmm. I thought, if I tell anyone, they're going to pack me up, lock me away in the loony bin, because they're going to say, oh, this pandemic's really hard on her. Like, she must be just terrified, PTSD, whatever it is. Because when you speak to most people about, why are we doing this? Why are we working this job for this long, being told when we can go take a piss or take a crap, or, you know, like, you can eat at 1 o'clock for 45 minutes. You're like, oh, golly, I was good today. I'm going to take, you can't share those thoughts.
Yeah, well, obviously you can, because you have and you are. And I think that's great.
I'm on the other side of the padded wall.
But are you? I mean, that's a really good question. Because, yeah, maybe this whole thing has been one big sell this whole time. It's so, to me, it's fascinating, because when you're asking these questions and you're going, well, people aren't asking these questions, people are going to think I'm crazy. Maybe I'm reading right now in my show, I'm going through The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron with a couple of co-hosts. Mm-hmm. And she says something in it that I think is really fascinating. She says, sometimes going sane feels like going crazy. Mm-hmm. That when you start really making these inroads into the things you're talking about, you start feeling like, maybe I'm nuts. Maybe there's something seriously wrong with me. But actually, you're the one who's going sane. You're the one who's figuring out that there's more. Yeah. So asking these questions and punching a time clock, and while you're doing all of that, and of course, going through this time where we're all asking these incredible questions and trying to find the answers. Yeah. We're not going to have them all at once. And that's okay.
And I think a lot of people during the pandemic maybe had this, you know, genre of awakening, if you will, mm-hmm. as I did, maybe not as, you know, diving into, can I talk to my grandma through a pendulum kind of weird, but maybe on a different level, professionally. And then asking questions like, wait a second, there's a shortage of food. There's a shortage of all these things. The financial system is fragile, right? All of these systems that were built and structures are so fragile. And here I am working for a company that is also so fragile. My entire existence basically depends, my livelihood depends on working for this company or in this industry. And the pandemic brought to light that this industry is fragile. I can't think of another word than fragile, sorry. But I'm trying to diversify my vocabulary, but it's fragile. And then you wake up, and I'm wondering if that's part of what led to this great resignation. There's just, why am I going to keep focusing on working for someone else when I can pull back, apply my skills, expertise, knowledge, curiosity into this industry in a more innovative way, work my own hours, not to ask if I can go, you know, potty. And I know corporate execs don't have to ask to go potty, but, you know, I'm just saying that you have to handle your stuff and be so on for somebody else.
Sure. And asking those questions makes us go, okay, can I do this? Can I break off on my own and apply, as you said, my skills, my talents, all of the things that I know, my experience to doing it for myself? You then take on a lot of responsibility that you might not have been ready for. So you have to be aware and you have to be cognizant even of all of the things that are involved with running your own business. But if you are, then the question becomes, why am I doing this for somebody else when I can do it for myself? And then the question becomes, do I have that audience? Do I have clients and customers? And if not, how do I find them so that I can support them and serve them, but also make enough money to, I kind of hate the words make a living, because I don't want to think that I'm just working in order to survive. Yeah, I want to thrive. I want to live, truly live on my own terms. As someone who I run my own business, you run your own business. We have the long-term goals, the short-term and mid-term goals. But ultimately, if you are willing to do that work, then why not? And that becomes a question we're all asking of ourselves. Yeah.
We control our fate.
Yeah.
But what in this great resignation, what part of it do you think is these people also saying, because this has been, you know, I think probably for the last 10 years, maybe more, but I've been aware and conscious of it for the last 10 years. People are saying, I'm gonna go backwards first. I'm gonna reverse engineer this thought. The ultimate goal, the Canadian dream, the American dream used to be to buy a house, to buy a piece of land, right? Be not too far from work or in the suburbs of this city where the taxes were good. You could entertain, you had a yard, maybe a pool, and you owned this thing, this place, your own little piece of paradise. What I found over the last 10 years is that people are moving towards this more digital nomad lifestyle. People are now in search of freedom. People don't want to be held back, tied back. They're saying, I can do this consulting work from anywhere in the world.
Sure.
Oh my gosh, I can travel in an RV with my kids. Like, all of these things are becoming possibilities. Mm-hmm. And so do you think that's part of the process of this thinking process of this great resignation is saying, I could take a leap into the unknown. I will handle my security. I'm not going to put my security in the hands of anyone else. Mm-hmm. It's going to be scary, but I want to take the leap because I'm no longer tied down. I'm completely free.
I think that's a really good question. I think location independence is, I think in many ways it's the future, provided all of the things happen that we need to have happen. Like, we're able to feed ourselves, like we're able to have health for the most part throughout the planet. Location independence is going to be a thing. It's already, like you said, it already is a thing, but I think it's going to even grow more because people are realizing for a long time in the last century, in the previous century, we didn't travel far. Most of us didn't travel far. And if you stayed within that 50-mile radius of where you were born, you didn't necessarily think about what's going on in Tibet or in Argentina. Now, because everything is global, we do. We can think about those things, and we can get, like you and I were talking about just a minute ago, we can get curious about them. So if you want to know about Costa Rica, yeah, you can Google Costa Rica, but you can also grab your RV and your kids and figure out a way to get down to Costa Rica and really experience it. Yeah. And so that's
find
the
a
thing.
Community of expats and, you know, the shit I Google, excuse my French, but it's like, like, you know, solo Canadian female traveler moving to Costa Rica, immigration rules and guidelines, and crap pops up.
Sure.
It's like, this is what you need to do. It has become so accessible. And even if it's just a dream, even if it's just a thing on the vision board, it's like, I know that this is now a possibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Whereas growing up in a remote northern town of Ontario here with a population of 5,000 before the internet era, I didn't know Costa Rica was a thing. That's exactly
absolutely
what you just said. You know, now I'm encouraged to be curious.
Absolutely. And, you know, technology is great until it isn't. But at the same time, for the most part, the innovation that all of these different entrepreneurs, for example, the rise of the entrepreneur just in the last 10 years have been incredible. Now, I mentioned to you earlier, I'm an immigrant. And when my family came over, I was born in the former Soviet Union. So English is actually not my first language. It's my fourth. But wow. When we came over, yeah, it's,
you can
it was
never
a,
tell.
well, thank you.
It's true.
So what's interesting about that to me is when we came over, even writing a letter, calling was almost impossible, right? Writing a letter, it would take months to get from the USA to where I was born in Moldova. And calling was a huge deal because making sure you could connect. And in communist Soviet Union, technology was terrible. So now if I want to talk to my mom who lives in another country right now, I get on WhatsApp. Hi, mom, how's it going? And that's a huge deal because, like we said, it's become this, everything that's huge has become small. And what do you think of that when you're thinking about, because the possibilities, like you said, they've opened up for you. When you're thinking about those dreams that you have, now it's on my vision board, now I know it's a possibility. Mm-hmm. How real is that for you? And what do you do to make some of those dreams happen?
Well, that's a great question. Thank you for asking me a question. I think that it makes, that's such a wonderful question. The first thing that comes to my mind is, oh my gosh, this is all possible. The second thing, because I'm human and I live in this physical reality and I've been conditioned and I'm trying to unlearn all the programming, is I won't have enough time to see and do it all. Mm. And then I catch myself, right? And I control, I'll delete that. And then the mom guilt kicks in. I'm like, oh my gosh, what if I'm, you know, living in Bali 6 months a year, my kid's going to come see me. It's not the, can I get to Bali or can I afford to live there? Will I meet wonderful people? Because I myself am so curious. I'm a chatterbox. I can, you know, spend a week alone as a hermit and have the freaking time of my life or in a social setting. So I'm not worried about me, but it's more of that, will the kids come to Bali and see me? And it's like control, I'll delete that thought. So it becomes, yes, it's 100% realistic. The possibilities are endless, but what order of priority, at what point do I want to lean into that curiosity? You know, my youngest is going to be 15 years old. So it's like the Maldives, they're starting to say they're going to disappear in the next 20 years. So the Maldives are on my list of things to see, but is it in the next 3 or 4 years? No, probably not. You know, riding horses. I've never ridden a horse and I'd love to stay at a dude ranch. I know this is insane, but you know, I'd love to stay at a dude ranch and help out and learn and see and do those things. Is that something that I want to do now? That's something that I want to do when I'm a little bit older. So it becomes negotiating with myself and taking that curiosity and diving into it even deeper.
Absolutely. And prioritizing.
Prioritizing, right? For me at this stage in my life. Yeah, he's almost 15, but you know what? He's still in high school. Is he going to want to leave with, you know, 1.5 years left of high school and come to Bali to meditate with me? And hopefully we meet, what's that guy's name? And he pray love Tuk Tuk or, you know, the guy, you know, is he going to want to do that? That's a conversation I could have with him, but by identifying and prioritizing what my goals are, then it facilitates the conversation, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. You know, and it's interesting. I meditate. And as I was meditating this morning, the thought that came into my head was, it wasn't eat, pray, love, but it was this notion of what are the moments that are important to me?
And yeah, I love that.
Because I believe as much as possible of being in the moment, but I'm also a big time planner person. I'm a fix-it personality. So when I'm a fixer personality and I want to make sure that I get all the problems resolved, I sometimes lose sight of, like you said, what is that goal? Because I get too involved in the process. So when you're talking about your youngest and you're going, is he going to want to do that with me? The plans that you can make with your youngest might shift depending on what is available, but you're keeping the goal in sight, right? If the Maldives, say that again.
And I'm open to it.
Sure. And that goes back to that curiosity piece. Right, you know, the Maldives is on my list too, because I have this deep need to go sit on a beach and look at the bioluminescent algae in the Maldives. That's something that I've always wanted to do.
Such a good point. A few nights ago, I'm not sure if you ever read the book, The Sex Lives of Cannibals, but if you haven't, you know, it's a great book.
And I haven't.
I read this book when I was 15, 16 years old, and it marked me. And the book is about this journalist who, you know, flies from New York City to Vanuatu. And he goes and, you know, checks out these tribes of Indigenous people and how they live in their culture. And it really impacted me. So now Vanuatu, who's been on my list since I'm 15, 16 years old, since I've read this book. And of course it's evolved and developed and it's not as difficult to get there anymore and all of those things. But again, that goes to, is that something that I want to experience now in my life? Am I ready at this age, this level of maturity, this, you know, have I done enough inner work and healing to really be at the end of the world, coming face to face with a tribe of cannibals? Am I ready to understand all of that?
It's a good question. Are you?
And that's the thing. So I think it's important to have these conversations with ourselves. And is the me that's here today, the happy me, the joyful me, the curious me? And this is, you know, more for our listeners, when you're thinking about being a nomad, is this me able to stay true to this me when she's halfway across the world?
And an even more interesting question might be, what do I have to do to stay true
to
that me?
To stay balanced, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because to me, it's interesting. When I talk with my coaching clients, I talk about asking yourself questions that aren't yes or no questions, because that just gives you a yes or a no. So for me, I would be going, if I want to stay true to myself, what do I need to do? How do I need to behave? Who do I need to be? And that's exactly where we started this whole discussion. You said, why am I here? Well, let's unpack that a little bit. What am I supposed to accomplish while I'm here? How am I supposed to be while I'm here? All of those questions become really fascinating when you start delving for those answers. Because if you're going to go to Vanuatu and you're going to go, I want to stand at the end of the world, then wow, who am I going to be when I'm there? And is it okay for me to be that person that I said I wanted to be when I was sitting, I'm in New York City. When I'm sitting in New York City and I go, I want to go to the Maldives. I want to go to Tonga, which just experienced that huge volcanic eruption. And it's changed the entire landscape of that whole part of the world. Who am I going to be becomes really powerful and profound, because you realize your place is both really small and really big.
Really? Yeah. I love that. Oh, I love that. And what do I want to accomplish while I'm there? Mm-hmm. And accomplish in the fact of, what do I want to see? What's important to me? You know, we're conditioned in North America for the shopping mall culture. You're going to Vanuatu, you're not going there to go find the nearest Macy's.
Yeah, the nearest Macy's is probably in Australia. So you're not going to find it.
So you're going to be there with yourself, faced with yourself. And that's terrifying for a lot of people. So I think that's why prioritizing what's important to you. And, it, you know, the two key words when you do all of the excavating and you do the seven layers of why always comes back to, for me, freedom, freedom and liberty, you know. And when I ask myself, why am I here today versus almost 2.5 years ago when I had my existential crisis, it's very clear to me that my purpose here is to explore and to just be and to soak it all in and to experience as much as possible. Just to accumulate experiences. You know, some people collect stamps, some people collect shooter glasses. I collect memories.
Sure. You know? And here's a question for you. What are the touchstones that you have of those memories? Do you keep something for yourself, or is just experiencing it enough?
Experiencing it is enough. I used to, when my kids were little, and now we haven't traveled in 2 years, but I used to get a postcard. Everywhere we went, we got a postcard, because I would scrapbook the photos. You know, the photos were the thing. And so I would scrapbook it. And, you know, if there was a map, a local map of the area, or if we took a cruise and was like, here's the map of the cruise port, then I'd cut out the little, so I would have that as a, oh yeah, I remember being there. But I've never been getting a t-shirts or a bag. I know where I've been. Mm-hmm. And it's very distinct. For me, St. Thomas, it's that rugged landscape that's in my heart. I don't need a t-shirt to tell me that I've been to St. Thomas. I don't need to look at the postcard to see that setting in my mind, you know? So it's little things like that stand out to me. But if I go back to St. Thomas, I remember that there was an older gentleman sitting on the sidewalk barefoot, and he had a rock in his hand, and we were walking back to the cruise port. And I've always been everyone's going, you know, to the right, I'm going left. Everyone's going to the left, I'm going right.
Good for you.
I can't, like, I can't do it. You know, I don't want you to know that I'm a tourist, even though it's dead set giving it away. Right. But I see this man. And so my husband at the time is walking ahead and the kids are kind of walking ahead and he's like, come on, Emma. And I'm like, I'm really curious about this man. His house is there, but he's kind of sitting on the sidewalk, you know, on a little ledge and he's banging something with a rock. So I said, hi, how are you? And big smile. And he says, oh, hi, how are you? I said, what are you? And he says, Almond, something like that in his accent. I was like, I couldn't understand. And then my oldest son says, oh, it's an almond. He had an almond tree. I'd never seen this. And he was cracking the nut of this almond thing. And we all stood there chatting with him for what seemed like forever, but 15, 20 minutes. That for me is what traveling is. That's the creating the memories part.
Absolutely.
You know, because my ignorant younger self was like, oh, almonds come from trees? That beautiful tree? You got to work that hard to get the nut. Like, you know, your mind starts going, holy crap, I've been taking this for granted. Just going to the bulk store and being like, you know, $2 a kilo for almonds. That's so expensive. And now I'm going, oh my God, they're undercharging. This is ridiculous.
Right, right.
Right. But that's,
you're making those connections, and that's
beautiful connections, thing. You know, and that man turned around and he was so grateful for our time that my youngest kept eyeing a conch shell. He had this conch shell just on the little like wall of his house, you know, and was looking at it and he's like, was there a critter in there one day? And he's like, oh yeah, would you like it? And I have that conch shell in my house today. So that's what I collect. That was a really long answer, but that's what I collect.
I think that's great. I think those kinds of, like we said just a minute ago, connections are the things. They are those touchstones. It was funny. My husband and I, when I had my last big zero birthday, I made a decision to travel to a new country every year. That was that's my goal. And I got to a couple before, before the pandemic shut us down, but we went to Cuba. And I have to tell you, first of all, if you can go, it is
Cuba.
It was amazing. And we were sitting at the Plaza Vieja, which is one of the squares that makes up Old Town Havana. And this guy comes up to my husband and offers him this drawing. And it was sort of a busking kind of situation because he offered him a drawing of him. The guy had drawn a thing and he offered him a drawing for a tip. And so Rich gave him some money, and then this guy didn't know, but Rich is an amazing artist, my husband. And so while the guy was sitting there against the wall, after all of this, Rich drew his picture. And so he walked over to the guy and gave him a picture of himself.
Whoa, that's cool.
And the guy was so happy. We have a picture of him sort of posing with his drawing of himself, big, huge smile. And we took that picture of him. And then we took another picture of Rich and him both holding their drawings that they had done of each other. And the guy said to us, no one has ever drawn me. He said, I draw people every day and no one had ever drawn him. And he was thrilled. And it's that kind of, like we said, that kind of connection that lets you really realize that you are in a different place and really, we're all the same. We all want those kinds of connections, those kinds of memories that we can build together. And if Rich wasn't an artist, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're open to the experience, and there's different kinds of travelers. I mean, you're obviously someone who loves to travel and you're curious and you want to explore, but I feel like, you know, a lot of times I speak with people who think they like to travel, but what they're looking for is a vacation. They want to go somewhere hot. They want to be catered to hand and foot. They don't care that the person who's serving you has five kids and he makes, you know, 30 cents a day. They don't want to know that. They want to disconnect, you know, let's disconnect. I have enough of my own problems, enough of my own crap. Just, I'm coming here to recharge.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, connection is a way to recharge. Curiosity is a way to recharge. And when I went to Cuba, the man, you know, my bartender, and I went alone with my boys, and he took care of me. He, you know, kept an eye on me, and I would have one drink at lunch and then a couple drinks after dinner because I was alone with my boys in a foreign country. But him and I were chatting, and never did he make me feel guilty or, you know, try to overshare his story in a way of poor me, poor me. This was the happiest man I've ever met. He was happy. He was grateful. He loved my kids, kept asking me about me, my life here in Montreal. What was I doing in Cuba alone? And we really built, you know, a nice rapport together. And along the way, he was talking to me about clothing and how difficult it was for them to obtain different types of clothing in Cuba, right? Because of the importation and all that. And I was blown away. And he says, well, no, sometimes you go to the store and it's one pair of pants or one t-shirt. And his boys were my boys' age. So what I did is I took all of the clothes that I brought to Cuba for the boys and I went and I gave it to Victor.
Oh, that's lovely.
But I didn't do that because he made me feel guilty about it or because I felt like this privileged person. My heart was really like, that really sucks that your kids have to wear the same t-shirt for 6 months at a time when here you go to Oshkosh, you know, it's like 20 different colors, 20 different styles of t-shirts. He gave me his address. He gladly accepted it. He says, I could say no, 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 but I know that. I said, no, my heart's speaking to yours and this is for your boys. It's not for you. And he laughed and he gave me his address and he says, next time you come, you stay with me, you know, my family, my kids, we'd love to have you and you bring your boys. That connection is what I remember is the people like you, the people, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's amazing. Sure. But you have to have that open. That happened at an all-inclusive resort. But if I'm not open to those types of connections, I wouldn't have had it.
Right. Absolutely. And the fact that you are open says so much to the person that you're making the connection with, right? They know, everybody knows, we know when someone is open to being heart to heart with us and when someone isn't.
And if they're being genuine.
Exactly.
They look at me and just gave them a suitcase of clothes versus shh, boys, just go wheel this over to Victor. Don't say anything, leave the suitcase, leave everything, you know? And that's the difference when you're just doing it for the person.
Sure. Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. We're talking about Cuba, so I'll tell you this quick story. One of the things that in where I'm from, you, when you come to visit anywhere, you bring guesting gifts, right? You bring something. You can bring a bottle of wine, you can, whatever it is. And we, I have a dear friend who visited Cuba a number of times in the 90s, and she loves artists and she's an artist. And so she brought suitcases full of art materials, paint, colored pencils, paper, things like that. And gave them out to whoever, whatever artist she met, she gave them out to people. And so when Rich and I went, I'm a musician. So I bought a bunch of recorders, little flutes, and he got a bunch of watercolor paint and colored pencils. And we brought those with us and we gave the recorders to a school. We found an elementary school right off the Plaza Vieja. Again, Plaza Vieja, we were there a lot. And, and we gave it to they actually were out of school that week, but we gave it to the principal and we just like, here, I have these, I brought 10, I gave her 7 or 8. And she was like, wow, because they were plastic. So they weren't going to go bad, if you will, because there's no replacing things, right? They repurpose and reuse so much, but it's not readily available. So for them, that was a huge deal. And we met some artists and Rich gave out at another school, a whole bunch of those watercolor paints and color pencils. And then later that week, we were in a gallery and we met Maria Consuelo was her name, really lovely woman, great art. I bought some of her art. And she said, you know, we don't have much, you reuse the colors, right? So as much as possible, I have 4 colors and I make everything happen with those 4 colors. And so when we came back and we gave her all those colored pencils, everybody in the gallery, because it was a sort of a, I don't remember the word, consortium of artists, they all were amazed that she had just gotten all of these because they just don't have anything, you know, and
that's gratitude.
Really incredible. Yeah. Well, it is gratitude, but it's also amazing. Their ingenuity, their ability to innovate and repurpose is unparalleled because they don't have a lot of resources.
They don't have a choice.
Exactly. And so it really impressed upon me how differently people live around the world. And that's what we started this conversation with was, you know, what is my place here? And when you can expand your awareness of those connections and how the experiences of other people are so different from yours, it brings home to you, I think, that you have every reason to be grateful.
We do. We have every reason to be grateful. I've loved this conversation so much. I mean, we were supposed to chat about several topics. but just before we go, tell me, what are your thoughts on this pandemic as it progresses? And, you know, we're here in Canada, we're now ready for our third dose of the vaccine. And those who are immunocompromised are being requested to go for a fourth dose. We just ended our curfew again. What are your thoughts on how it's evolved and progressed and all of that jazz?
I have so many thoughts. I think that we are in a unique position, and I'm in New York City in the USA, and we have so many people that we, if we band together and work together and really realize that there's a common goal here, things can open up much more easily and quickly. But as long as we are divided on the thoughts about how to best deal with the pandemic, it's going to become, I think Fauci said this just the other day. He said, the pandemic is going to become endemic. We're just going to have to live with this virus in one way or another because we have so many variants. And to me, part of this is that we didn't change our behavior sufficiently when things started in order to make substantive permanent change. And because we didn't change our behavior, we have changed the trajectory of how we're going to interact with one another significantly for many years to come.
You think so?
I do. I really do. Because we're seeing that in the evidence, right? We're seeing numbers growing again. If you are opening things up, I think that's great. But if you open them up and it's kind of like, you know, that there are bees outside or hornets, let's say, we'll say hornets, you know, that there are hornets outside and you open the door and you walk outside and you get stung. Oh, you're going to go back inside. You're going to close the door. Why? Because there are hornets outside. And so if you think that the hornets have gone, but you don't really check and make sure that they're gone and you don't protect yourself before you go outside, the next time you're outside, probably you're going to get stung again. Mm-hmm. So we keep playing this strange little game with the globe's health. And that's a problem for me because I want to see everybody thriving. I want to see everybody healthy. I want to be able to travel and make those connections like you and I were talking about. And right now that's curtailed. And I see it's a selfish thing to say, but I want the opportunity to travel. I want the opportunity to feel healthy, you know?
I don't think that it's selfish because what is the alternative? That we all stay inside of our houses until we die?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why.
But you know, for me, it's make it make sense. And what you're saying is great. But for us, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. The closing, the opening, and the measures, right? And the way you explained it is so perfect. So for us here, if you are vaccinated, all of your doses, and you have your vaccine passport, you can go to the mall, do the shopping, eat in the food court. This is till next Monday because now they're switching things up. If you're unvaccinated, you can go to the mall, you can do all of the shopping, you can go in all of the stores. Now the vaccinated and the unvaxxed have to wear masks. Mm-hmm. Right? That's fine. That's cool. I'm cool with that. So I can go shopping. I can spend all day in the mall, go inside the stores, use the facilities, the washrooms, but I can't eat in the food court, sit there and eat a meal, even though the tables are 6 feet apart and all that, because I'm not vaccinated. So for me, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what you were saying of kind of these half-assed measures of how does that work?
So, you know, it's interesting. To me, it doesn't make sense on the surface, but it does make sense when I delve a little bit deeper, and that is viral load, right? So if the more virus you're exposed to, the sicker you'll get, the longer you, if you're an unvaccinated person or even vaccinated, the longer you spend time in concentrated areas without a mask on, the more chance you have of having inhaled, I guess, more virus. And the more virus you have, the sicker you get. That makes sense. But when I think about it, I agree with you. Oh, why is it that in order to essentially keep the economy functioning, we're going, yeah, you can go outside. Yeah, you can go shopping. Yeah, you can go sit and eat. But if you're not vaccinated, you have to get your food to go. And that's the only difference.
And what's separating us is one of those little black cords.
Right, right.
You're sitting there with your mask off and the other guy's sitting on the other side and he's ordering. Right. That for me, right?
I agree with you. And again, when I look at it, when I look at it from that medical perspective, my sister's a doctor, so she and I have talked about this a lot. She's like, it's not whether or not you're exposed, it's the amount you're exposed to.
The amount you're exposed to.
And that notion of you're sitting there for half an hour without your mask on
there's
and you're not
bus,
vaccinated.
Or in the subway or in all
exactly.
of these things,
yeah.
You know?
So that's why.
Counterintuitive. Yeah. What would you like to see? What are your final thoughts on the pandemic, and what do you think we could do as a population in order to kind of, you know, make this go smoother and quicker so we can all get back to traveling?
I think we need to, it's a good question. I think we need to change a lot of our farming practices and mm-hmm. and that's a whole nother kettle of corn. That's a whole nother episode. But there are significant things we can do. But one of the first things is we all have to agree that there's a problem that needs to be solved, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the things here in the USA that hasn't happened. There are significant numbers of people who don't believe it's a problem. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me how, and funny and tragic, I will say, there are a lot of people who were very anti-vax, who were like radio DJs or personalities, you know, influencers, and then who got sick. And as they were getting close to death, were saying, yeah, I really wish I'd gotten a vaccination. I wish I'd taken this seriously. So there is proof in the pudding that we can, if we can, look at this entire situation, take it very seriously, then we can make some of those changes that will allow us to travel, that will allow us to reconnect in person again. But we haven't done it yet. And
to standardize it.
Absolutely.
Because if we want to travel halfway across the world, then my country, my province, your country and your state cannot be making decisions independently, flying by the seat of their pants and kind of like, well, this is how it is in New York, but it's completely different in Florida. But then if you want to travel to the Maldives, it's completely different. And oh, no, you have a pit stop in Frankfurt. Oh, that's.
That's going to be,
we
got to
standardize it. We got to just know, right? Like there just needs to be a protocol we need to solve. For me, it's all about making it make sense, make it user-friendly. If it's not going away, this is what I need to do. This is what I need to do once I'm there. This is how I protect me and I protect others. And
absolutely. And that's the thing is it's respect for the other people. Right. Yeah. Why do I wear my mask? I respect the members of my community. I want to make sure that I am doing my part to be a good neighbor, if you will. So
on a closing note, I kind of feel naked without it now.
I
go out and I'm like, oh, they can see my face.
Right. Oh, I wonder what's happened to like lipstick sellers and whether or not they've lost a lot of money.
Well, I can tell you, if you're going to put on a really cute, thick, shimmery lip gloss and then put your mask over top just because you want to feel sexy that day, don't.
Right.
I've gotten into the pharmacy with my duck lips to my mask and I couldn't. It was horrible.
I've started wearing lip stain that way. Oh, it's
I love
you know
it.
That way I can be
feel
there.
Alive a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that like you said, you feel naked without it. And for me, you know, you're even obviously colder than we are here, but my husband and I were out walking the other day and it was one of the days where it was very, very cold. I can't do the Fahrenheit to Celsius conversion in my head, but it was really cold, way below zero. And I realized that my mask was keeping my face warm and
yes.
I was like, yay, I'm actually kind of happy I have it on because I never realized how much of my face was freezing before I wore the mask. So in that way, it's yet another little benefit of being kind and considerate to your to the other people around you.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me today and just kind of like a melting pot of ideas and topics. And, you know, I hope our listeners got some nuggets and inspiration. I am grateful for you. You're welcome back anytime to talk about whatever you want.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me. This was great.
Yeah, thank you. And you know what? If for some reason traveling is not possible, I feel like you and I have a future in writing books about travel, you know, educating the future generations about what it was like.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's do it. Thank you so much for being here. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you so much, Emmanuel. Bye.